Good morning. This is the Monday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. Today is part two of KSJD's three-part series on wildfire, and this morning we'll be talking about the challenges of fighting fires in what is known as the wildland-urban interface, the zone of transition between unoccupied land and human development where the most destructive fires occur. Joining me in the studio this morning is Cortez Fire Chief Jeff Vandiverde, and also here is Rebecca Simulski. She's the Wildfire Prevention and Education Specialist with the Montezuma County Fire Chiefs Association. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start, Jeff, let's talk a little bit about where conditions are right now. Things have definitely been elevated over the last few days, and we've had a lot of wind. What's the danger like right now out there?
The danger is really very high. We've had a lot of red flag warnings the last few weeks, and the moisture we had in the beginning of the year was nice, but it kind of grew off fuels and stuff, and now everything's drying out, so it makes it going to make it a lot harder because we're going to have more fuels to worry about when we do get a fire.
Okay. We're going to talk this morning mostly about the wildland-urban interface. So let's just start off. Rebecca, can you give some examples or describe what the wildland-urban interface is?
Yeah, I think you gave a pretty good definition as far as where kind of the homes and the populated areas intermixing with the wildlands. But people tend to think of that as forest, and it doesn't have to be. It can be grasslands, and Texas has an incredible grassland, wildland, and urban interface problem. Then you look at the Front Range, and there's more of a what we think of as a traditional wildland-urban interface where you have a kind of a wall of homes, huge neighborhoods backing up against forest or wildlands. We don't have a whole lot of that here. There's some little border areas of maybe Dolores and Cortez that are kind of like that. We have a lot more wildland-urban intermix where your homes are scattered throughout the piñon juniper, ponderosa, sagebrush, dried fields.
Are most people pretty clear whether they're not, whether they are or are not in a wildland-urban interface with their home?
I think people in the forest know that they are. I think once you start getting out of the forest and the fuels get to where you can see over them, people aren't as in great of recognition that they are still in a wildland-urban interface, even though the fire may be less intense when it comes through that area.
Right. Jeff, let's talk a little bit about protecting homes in that wildland-urban interface. How is that different from what you might do in a typical structure kind of protection situation?
Well, basically, we look at like the Roadcap fire that we had. There's quite a few houses that were in danger. So you use a lot of resources to surround those houses or businesses or whatever to try to protect them. So you're taking a lot of your resources to fight the fire to go protect houses. So people have to realize when they move into an area that is high fuel areas and stuff, it's their responsibility also, not just ours, to try to protect their own houses. So this way we don't use a lot of our resources to protect houses or whatever. You know, a good house that's got a good clearance around and stuff helps us a lot.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Monday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. It's part two of our series on wildfire this morning, and we're talking this morning about fighting fires in the wildland-urban interface. So talk a little bit more about defensible space. What does that mean when you arrive on a scene and you've got all this defensible space around a house? So what does that mean for firefighters?
It means a lot. We can tell that if the fire does encroach the house, that it's probably going to be a safe house because it's not a lot of fuels around there. They did the right things to protect their houses, so it helps us move down to the next area and see what else needs to be protected or where we need to put our resources.
What about things like when you arrive on a scene, do you sometimes use water that's available at a house, or are there other resources that you might be looking for to help fight a fire around a structure?
Basically, we're just using our structural engines when if we can get them in there to protect the houses. We have brush vehicles and other vehicles that we use for the actual wildland firefighting. But as far as structural protection, which would be just almost like a regular structure fire for us, where we'll have a structural engine with the crew on it.
Okay. And Rebecca, when you talk to people about preparing their home and creating this defensible space, let's just talk again. What does that look like for homeowners?
Well, the idea of that defensible space is to give Jeff and his crews the opportunity to get in there and protect those homes. And if the fuels do come all the way up to the home, then it's not a safe environment for them to go in if you have a crowning fire or intense fire coming into that area. Within that first 30 feet of the home, more if there's any much terrain around the house, everything needs to be really lean, clean, and green. Maybe a couple of trees, but if you have trees in that area, you kind of treat them like your house, and they're very well limbed up. They're watered. They're treated like pets.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see that people might think, oh, this is fine, this isn't a problem, but it really does create some problems for defending a home in the event of a fire?
I think one of the things, and the chief just kind of mentioned it a second ago, was they drive their big structure protection engines in to protect your house. And some of the driveways around here are fairly long and are also have forest and fuels along the roads. So instead of just working around the house, it's also really important to create that defensible space along the edge of the road.
And Chief, is there anything that you're seeing that is maybe a misconception on the part of a homeowner, or anything else that you see where you say, oh man, I wish you hadn't have done that? Anything you can just put out there for people to think about?
Not really. Basically, like Rebecca said, is, you know, if they really work around our house and make sure that it's a safe house and everything, you know, that's important to us. I really haven't seen anybody, you know, do anything that they shouldn't have done. Basically, the worst they can do is not do anything. They need to protect their houses because, you know, we're going to put our crews in there, but we're not going to risk any lives or anything to save a house that, you know, might be burning down because it's just a structure, and we have to watch out for that too. So basically, by not doing anything is probably the worst thing they could do.
Okay. This is the Monday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. Today is part two of our three-part series on wildfire, and this morning we're talking about creating defensible space around your home, especially if you're in the so-called wildland-urban interface. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. We are back. This is the Monday Morning Zine. You're listening to KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. Today is part two of our three-part series on wildfire, and joining me in the studio this morning are Rebecca Samulski. She's the Wildfire Prevention and Education Specialist with the Montezuma County Fire Chiefs Association, and also joining us is Cortez Fire Chief Jeff Vandiverde. Rebecca, before the break, we were talking a lot about defensible space and what that looks like and how that benefits firefighters when they do have to get called to an event and a fire. How do people get help when they need to create some defensible space around their particular home and property?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of resources through the Colorado State Forest Service that provide guidelines for what that should look like beyond even the 30 feet to really get that fire down to the ground before it gets into that kind of zone one area around the house. I'm also available through the Fire Chiefs Association and FireWise of Southwest Colorado to talk on the phone, help answer some of your questions, or to come out and do an on-the-ground walk around your place and kind of help you prioritize it. There's a lot of folks around here that have a lot of acreage, and it's very difficult to figure out where to start when you have 20, 40, 160 acres of pinyon juniper forest with lots of dead pinyon. And so I'm available to help people with that. And my number is 564-7860.
Are there any financial incentives, like tax incentives at all, for people to do this kind of work?
Yeah, we have the Colorado, state of Colorado has a tax deduction for any work that you have done. That's pretty much got to be done with the contractor. You need to have some kind of invoice for that, and then you can deduct half of the cost of your work off of your taxes, off of your earned income. And then we also have a chipper rental rebate program through FireWise that you can use to help deal with some of that slash around your property. And this summer, we're going to be piloting in Montezuma County a low-income mitigation program for folks who can't do the work themselves and also can't afford a contractor to come in and do the work. So there's some financial things. There's also a lot of educational tools to help people do the work by themselves.
Sure.
Or learn how to do it with their neighbors as well that we have.
Yeah, and if you missed our part one of our series, we did talk quite a bit about some of the resources that are available for people. You can find that on our website here at ksjd.org. Chief Vandiverde, it's pretty slow fire season so far around here. Nothing too crazy has been going on. Can you talk a little bit about what you've seen, what's been going on with what your department's been working on fire-wise?
Yeah, basically, you're correct. It's been a slow fire season throughout all of Colorado. So our resources in the area are strong. I mean, we've got hotshot teams stationed by Durango. We've got a couple small air tankers stationed at our airport, some helicopters. So all the resources are pretty much set in our area. Basically, what we've been running into is any fire we've had basically has been human caused. Somebody starting a control burn that gets out of control, and they call us. So we've had a few lightning strike fires, but it's been slow so far this year.
What should people do if they're planning to burn?
They need to basically look and see what the weather conditions are going to be. They need to call dispatch, the fire dispatch non-emergency number, which is 565-8454, and let them know that they want to do a burn today. And this way, dispatch can also tell them if it's going to be a red flag warning or not. And if people see smoke, they know that there's a control burn and they're not sending our resources to that area. So definitely they need to call up before they burn.
So it sounds like you're feeling pretty good about the level of resources in this area right now. Is there anything that you see that might be a blind spot right now, or anything more that you would like to see in terms of resources for firefighters across the area?
Basically, right now, we're doing really well. I mean, the problems we run into, if it's a big fire season, all these resources get deployed out, then it basically falls upon the departments to handle it with maybe some help from the Bureau of Land Management. The Forest Service might send some people out. So we're very lucky so far this year.
Okay. Rebecca, anything else before we wrap up that you want to share with folks about what they might want to be thinking about right now? We've got some pretty high wind days. Certainly this weekend, we had a lot of high winds. Looks like we're looking at some cooler temperatures, but the winds are going to remain up there in the 20 to 30 mile per hour range, I think. Yeah. Anything else you want to share with folks right now?
I would think about not burning now. aside from the fact that today's a red flag warning and that you can't burn today, we're kind of past that season for a few months when you really got to be burning anything outside unless you're having a small campfire up in the woods until a band gets on there, and then you can't do that either. So I would really be careful about that. And it's also really important to start being careful as the grasses dry out about where you park your vehicle or your toys and how you're using tools in the outdoors, what you're doing with your cigarette butts. What other big fire causes do you have
chainsaws.
Here, Jeff, that people
chainsaws
gotta be careful with?
Like
that was
yep.
the tools.
Yep.
Make sure you got a spark arrestor.
Yep. Yeah.
And you know that one of the things that I think we see getting a lot of burning all year round is trash, people burning trash in a barrel or not in a barrel because they don't have trash service. And it's actually not permissible. It's actually against the law to be burning trash anyhow. So if that's an excuse to be burning through the summer, it's really not a very good one.
Chief, do you see any fire bans or restrictions coming up pretty soon? I mean, we got 4th of July here, kind of right around the corner, which I'm sure makes you a little bit nervous anyway. But any other bans that you see coming down the road?
You know, I think there's a possibility if the weather continues the way it is, the sheriff, he'll get in contact with all the five fire chiefs and see what their thoughts are. Conditions change from place to place, of course, but last few years we've had a fire ban on during the 4th of July, which has helped a lot. This year so far we haven't had a fire ban, so, I mean, it could basically cause some problems.
Yeah, that was really interesting for me to hear this morning in your weather report that you went from today is, I think, the first day that I've heard it, extreme conditions. So we're kind of just reaching that point with the real high winds and the long, warm days, warmish, not as warm as they could be, fortunately.
Yeah.
But really starting to dry out those fine fuels and bringing the fire risk up to a much higher level. So and that's kind of when we start looking, when we start seeing human-caused fires because somebody's tailpipe was in the grass. That's when we start looking at putting on a ban.
Okay. Well, thank you both for being here this morning. It was nice getting the information, and hopefully our listeners are getting good information as well from this series.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Tom.
That's Cortez Fire Chief Jeff Vandiverde and Rebecca Smolsky, Wildfire Prevention and Education Specialist with the Montezuma County Fire Chiefs Association. The final part of KSJD's three-part series on wildfire will be next Monday, June 23rd, on The Zine. If you missed part one or would like to hear today's program again, you can listen to them at ksjd.org. For KSJD, I'm Tom Yoder.